There's great hope for rebuilding trust in a relationship. Great hope. And the Bible gives us a very clear path of how. But you're not going to do it by just saying, I'm sorry, forgive me, I won't do it again. That's not going to do it. You've got to do the things God did.
I know in my own life, I began to experience a deeper level of clinical depression. I remember going onto my Facebook post one night and just simply saying to people, hey, how are you doing? And I said, now don't tell me the right answer. Tell me how you're doing. And it was kind of shocking and sad to read. Mm-hmm. What in the world is going on? And what have you seen the major shifts in the last few years?
Well, one thing, Sheila, is you're exactly right about the reality of it. You know, before COVID, we would probably 16-18% of people in America were diagnosable with depression, anxiety, or addiction. By the middle of 2020, over 40% would meet criteria.
Wow.
So, you know, these aren't those people that are struggling. This is the person sitting next to you at the dinner table, right, or at work. And so the numbers are really big. Mm-hmm. When I think about it, though, if you were going to design a perfect bullet to fire at a human to wreck their life, it would be COVID. Mm-hmm. And this is what I mean by that. The way we're constructed, we basically need some simple ways of doing life. We need to be really connected. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to have like some rhythms and some routines. Yeah. That's why kids settle down when they have structure. God made days and nights and weeks, and there's supposed to be a rhythm to life. We're supposed to have control over making decisions and ordering our lives. And we're supposed to be able to process the negative stuff, all right? So COVID comes along. It wipes out everybody's connections. Mm-hmm. Now they're isolated, stuck at home, most people, and depending on, you know, how much, but really, really cut off from the people they would normally get together with. Secondly, you pull up everybody's calendar and there's white space. The structure, the regular groups you used to go to this small group or church or even in office regular meetings, and the structure was gone. The third thing was, your sense of having control. Why don't we have lunch? Oh, no, we can't do that. Let's go to, no, we can't do that. And the sense of having control of being able to make choices, that was gone. And then people weren't able to process all of what this was feeling like to them. And here's, because you're asking about it now, we kind of think, well, COVID's over. But what happened was those patterns that got set up in people's lives, a lot of people have not rebooted their lives to get reconnected and in control and have routines and pursue things and process things. And it's kind of remained for a lot of people.
I noticed, like even in my own son's life, graduate school, you know, about to start graduate school, and suddenly there's no campus, you know, they're all Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
So he doesn't get to meet anybody.
Yeah.
There's nobody to sit and over lunch and talk about, did you know what he was talking about? There was none of that. Do you think this has been harder on the younger generation or right across the board?
Well, I think it's certainly across the board, but I think it's been difficult for them particularly because when you're looking at the younger generation, what you're looking at is you're looking at a still-to-be-formed human, right? We know everything about the way the brain is and the way the soul is and all of that and the way that, you know, that final stage of separating from home and establishing an adult life, that goes in stages. And so their developmental path was interrupted. Mm. So it's almost like you dropped out of human school while you're getting formed. And plus, a lot of those steps in there have so much to do with community and the peer group and the right peer group and mentors and models and finding somebody other than my parents that's a big person that I'll listen to. And they lost all of that. And so I think it's hit a lot of them really hard.
You are known across the planet, and if there are other planets occupied by people, they'll know about you too. Because one of your books...
The other planet people actually like me.
Oh, they do?
Yes, the earthlings I have.
They're not so sure. I don't believe that. But you wrote this phenomenal book called boundaries. Mm. And what always blows me away is it still appears in the best. I mean, how many years ago did you write that?
I was 2 years old. It came out in the 90s, actually.
Oh, my gosh. Why is that book still so sought after and relevant?
Well, you know, boundaries, basically the concept is a boundary is a property line. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like your house or your apartment. You got a property line, and this is where you are, and that's yours, and then you have a neighbor, right? And we're supposed to have property lines that we don't step over. Well, ever since Adam and Eve, we've been, the Bible's word is trespassing. We trespass the boundaries. And so now somebody wants to get in your head and control you, or they're out of control with an addiction or irresponsible spending or whatever it is. And you're experiencing the consequence. They're falling in your yard. It's like they're not trimming their trees and the limbs crashing on your roof. And so what boundaries did was it reminded everybody. Everybody thought, oh, what a new concept. It's all the way through the scriptures. Mm-hmm. I mean, God has talked about trespassing for a long time, but he's also talked about, and here's a key element, or a couple of them. One is self-control.
Yeah.
You know, the Bible talks about self-control and freedom and choice as, in fact, Galatians 5:1 says, it is for freedom that Christ has set you free. If you don't have freedom, you don't have love, because you're being manipulated into loving. And so it helped people say, look, this is my life, my feelings, my attitudes, my behaviors, my choices, and I need to get in control of those. And then if somebody else is being mean or gaslighting or critical or abusing, it taught them that to say no to that, you know, you can be that way, but I don't have to do it, or I don't have to tolerate this behavior. And you look through the scriptures, and the boundaries are so clear.
Yeah.
But I think it hit a nerve with Christians specifically, because we're just taught to sacrifice and be patient and long-suffering and forgiving and all this. But there are some people, God says, yeah, you're to love them, but you're to love them and have limits. And that's the only way some people change.
Yeah.
And the Christian needs, not the Bible, but what we get taught, I think, confuses a lot of people.
Now, I have an advantage over many, most perhaps, of our viewers, in that I've known you for a long time.
You think that's an advantage?
I personally count it
like
a big
brain damage.
A big advantage. But I remember when you and I did, we called it a pre-conference during the Women of Faith days, and you and I got to share the platform. And I remember you sharing something about your own childhood. Mm. And I want people, because you've got a brand new book out that we're going to talk about, but before that, I want people to understand that life has not just been easy from day one for you. Talk a little bit about those struggles when you had to, I don't know if it was calipers you wore on your leg or.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was floating along kind of okay as a three-year-old, almost four. And then I woke up one morning with, actually early one morning, then at church that morning, and I had really severe pain in my left hip. And it got worse and worse, and they couldn't diagnose it. I was in the hospital for a couple of months, and they couldn't figure out what it was. And Sheila, this is a God story, because my mother said that she had taken me to the appointment where they were discussing amputation. And she's in the waiting room, and she said a voice spoke to her and said, get up and leave and take him to a very specific hospital.
Wow.
And she said to her friend, we got to go. And she's like, what? And so she talked my father into this, who was otherwise a pretty reasonable man. I heard a voice. Okay, let's go 200 miles away. And they took me there. And I got randomly assigned to a woman orthopedic surgeon who had just moved there not too long before that and had been trained under the two doctors that had discovered the treatment for this disease. She's like one of a handful of people.
It gives me chills.
That existed. And she examined me, looked at the x-rays, and she said, I know exactly what this is. I know how to treat it. And then I was in a wheelchair and braces. I couldn't walk for a couple of years. And that was kind of how it all started out. And that, but that really, I didn't know it then as much. You know, now I can walk, but But it really did some things. There was trauma involved in that that later on, basically it hit me in college, mm-hmm. where I started having flashbacks and went into a depression and was really hurting. Mm-hmm. And it had its effects, but then God stepped in.
I remember you using a phrase when we would do our seminar together. And to this day, people come up and ask me this question.
Uh-oh.
Sheila, who's your monkey? Please unpack
still,
that for our audience. Still to this day, people ask me that.
Yeah, we were in an arena. You know, it's a lot of women there. And I was talking about it's like I was mentioning before about connectedness.
Yeah.
You know, the way God has designed us from birth, that's why I wrote a book on trust. From birth, the biggest gift we have is God's given us this gift of trust.
Yeah.
And why do we need that? Because you can't live without trusting. Now, we forget, God's the creator. The rest of us derive life from outside of ourselves. It's got to be put into us. Mm. And, you know, you take a baby and you feed them and water them, but if they're not connected with and loved, their brain sizes are smaller, their immune system suffers, their body weight is lower, their IQ is lower. They get to be 10 or 12 years old if they were raised, you know, in an institution and mm-hmm. nobody held them and loved them. They literally don't have the wiring in their brain that's to help with behavior problems because they missed it.
Wow.
You have to redo it. But the point was, that goes from the womb to the tomb. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need it throughout life. And I was quoting a study, to your point, one of my favorite studies. They took monkeys, and this is back when you didn't get in trouble for...
You were allowed to take monkeys.
You can't do stuff with monkeys now, I guess. But they would put them in a cage, and they would just terrorize them, you know, with sounds, and they weren't hurting them, but the flashing lights and symbols, and the monkeys are like scared, right? And they would draw blood from their brains to get the stress levels and the stress hormones that were being secreted, see how much stress they're under. And then they would only do one thing. They didn't get rid of the stressors, they didn't get rid of the noise. All they did was they opened the cage door and they took the monkey's buddy and put him in the cage and locked him back in. Then they redrew the blood and the stress levels had dropped by 50% just because the monkey's buddy was in their cage. And so I turned to the audience and said, who's your monkey? We all need a monkey.
But I think when it was like literally a couple of months ago, I'm walking through the airport and a woman comes up to me and says, Sheila, who's your monkey? But it made me think how relevant that is, like during the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Because I needed that. I mean, I did the first 6 months of COVID. I loved it because I thought, I don't have to go on the road. I can stay in my pajamas all day. And then I thought, that's probably not healthy. So I had daytime pajamas and nighttime pajamas.
That's an upgrade.
Yes. But I found myself spiraling again.
Yeah.
And I have these three women who I call my safe sisters. And we get on a Zoom call or we meet.
Yeah.
And sometimes during that COVID, when I was not doing well, we were supposed to be on, and I would say, girls, I'm sorry, I can't do it today. And they were like, get on the phone now. And it was Zoom, so we could see each other's faces. But to me, that just exacerbated or showed so clearly how much, even those of us who are introverts and think we don't need people as much, we desperately do.
And that's a misunderstanding too. Introverts need people as much as extroverts. Introverts just are wired in a way where too much stimuli actually reduces connectedness,
mm-hmm.
and only a few people, then they'll experience it more. But every human needs it. And you mentioned something really important in there. You didn't want to do it. Mm. You know, you're feeling too crummy. And one of the most difficult, and I'll say this to everybody listening, one of the most difficult things that depression does is, you know, your whole system goes down, and so the impulse to reach out mm-hmm. just is not there, and you can't get moving, and you know, you have no energy. That's why the structure of having to go to that small group, having to be on that Zoom call, mm-hmm. having to, you know, meet with a therapist or a pastor or a friend, if you've got it in your calendar and the appointment's there, that gets people over the hump, and then they get connected, and then they feel better.
Yeah.
But it's not something that comes easily to a depressed person at all.
Yeah. But just that thing that I had to do made a world of difference. But what I want to talk to you.
But you mentioned something else.
What's that?
You said there was something about seeing their face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's heard the term mirror neurons.
Yeah.
And that's how God has wired us literally from infancy to where when our pain or our joy or anything else is seen, unconsciously, the system connects with the person connecting, and your brain starts to change literally because of that mirroring. And that reduces some chemicals inside, like oxytocin, which is a bonding chemical, which causes you to open up more.
Wow.
And the other thing about that is, I often ask people, why do you think God put your tear ducts in your eyes? Now think about this. We all want to hide our pain, right? So, you know, what if he put them under your arm? You could spray a little no-tear deodorant down the back. Nobody knows, they can't smell my tears, right? I'm not sad. A lot of people do that. They put it on a happy face. Our tears should be seen. Hmm. We should be, the Bible says, weep with those who weep.
Yeah.
And we can hook people's brains up to scans. And when their pain is seen and mirrored and understood, literally the brain starts to change and it starts to move that pain through an entire system that moves over to the parts that have understanding and meaning and time. Now it can be in the past, it's not ever present.
Wow.
Just from the connection. And I think that's one of the reasons God says, you know, a lot of times he's not doing anything about something, but he says, my presence will be with you. I will be with.
Wow.
And this being with is the foundation of human thriving.
That's fascinating. You have a new book out, significant big book called Trust. Is it true you haven't written a book in 7 years?
It was a while. I think the last one was like 2016 or so, and then I got busy developing a lot of online stuff.
That would be 7 years.
Yeah, that's a while.
That's a
but
while.
I wrote, yeah. And then COVID hit and bunch of stuff. And this is a book that I've been literally working on for probably 15 years.
So I want to ask you about that. Why did you write on trust, and why do you think that is so foundational to who we are?
Well, it's foundational in a number of ways. One is, it is the way that life works. I was sitting on a plane when I was researching this stuff, and a guy next to me says, so what are you working on? I said, I'm researching trust. And he goes, oh, I don't trust anybody. He said, you can't trust people. I just trust myself. Learned a long time ago, you can't trust anybody.
Wow.
And I said, well, you know what? I'm a psychologist. You're crazy. That's a professional opinion, Bubba.
I bet that helped.
You know what? I said, well, you're out of touch with reality. So what are you talking about? I said, look out the window. We're at 40,000 feet. Did you get yourself up here?
Mm-hmm.
You're trusting a couple of people up there in the cockpit. What about the guy that put fuel in the plane? How do you know it wasn't chocolate milk? You're trusting a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but I bet if I heard your story, that there are some ways that your heart has been wounded, that you've shut down in trusting people in that way. Tell me your story. It's the way that God created us. It's kind of like saying, why is sunlight and minerals and water foundational to a plant thriving?
Mm-hmm.
But if you cover a plant with Teflon, and it can't open up and let all that in, then it's gonna wilt, it's gonna die. So it's foundational to not only our thriving, but our healing. And, you know, a lot of people suffer, Sheila, because, you know, they're trusting God and they're turning to God, but the very God that they're turning to says in the Bible that we have to have each other because he puts his spirit in each other to give us his grace. Actually, 1 Peter 4 says that when we're connecting with each other, we're loving each other and using our gifts with each other, we're administering the grace of God in its various forms.
Yeah.
And you know, Paul, we think of Paul as a great apostle, and he was, and all that stuff he did. But there's, you know, a section there where he went through some pretty hard times, and he's actually, he says he despaired of life. That's like suicidal feelings. Wow. He was, and then he says this, he says, but God, who comforts the depressed, sent Titus to me. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that, back to trust, the problem is that most of us have experienced something in life where trust was broken.
Yeah.
Where you were betrayed, or you were abused, or you were abandoned, or just depended on somebody in some significant way that they let you down.
Yeah.
And when that trust muscle takes a ding, then that has ramifications for the rest of life, you know, the future relationships and the way we function. But the other problem is this, that people have developed through dysfunctional relationships or whatever, the inability to spot who's trustworthy and who isn't. And there are a lot of charming people or smart people, this and the other, that really you should not be trusting with your heart and your wallet and a bunch of other things. And so one of the reasons I wrote the book was I wanted to give people, if you factor analyze, look at all the things that go into it. We have a button inside that at some point we hit go and we open up and we trust someone. But we can open up and trust someone, and the objective reasons why that makes sense aren't there, but we're just caught up in the either the need or their gifts or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I wanted people to have a model to look at so they could look at these things have to be present in a relationship for me to actually depend on you, to trust, to need you. Because trust is about being vulnerable. We open ourselves up where somebody can hurt us or let us down.
I'm thinking of a viewer who says, well, I trusted God to heal my husband and he died. Yeah. I trusted God. You know, you can fill in all the blanks. What do you say to that person who says, I trusted God, but he let me down?
Well, the first thing is, I wouldn't give you any formula because that's what Job said.
Yeah.
And Job spends a lot of chapters saying exactly what you have said if you've been in that situation. Mm-hmm. And he was angry. He felt like, you know, God was terrorizing him and all of this. And he just poured it out. And the friends that came along and gave him the little Christian answers, I mean, it's like a walk through a Christian bookstore.
I know. I wanted to smack each one of them.
You know what they said? Well, the equivalent, you don't know his precepts. You're not in the Word enough. How many depressed people get caught? You don't have enough faith.
Yeah.
Get the sin far away from you.
Yeah.
Let your righteousness be your guard. And they gave him all these little Christian answers. And Job turned to them and said, you are worthless physicians. And then he said, oh, that your wisdom were silenced. In other words, shut up. I'm sick of listening to this. So the first thing I would say is, God put that in his book, and I think in part he put that in his book so that we would know that he knows that there is suffering and we don't understand. This is the biggest question to me.
Yeah.
For me, believing in God is not that. I don't think all this came from nowhere, right? But believing in a God that loves us and can do anything and still, for some reason, allows sometimes suffering to continue and doesn't do it. I don't have an answer for that.
You know?
No. I wish I did, except the answer that God gave. And that was basically that he knows and he understands and he's with you. And he understands things that we don't understand of why he says no sometimes. But what he does say is that in that, he will be with us and cause us to be with each other.
Hmm. Don't you think it's interesting?
I don't have an answer to why.
Yeah.
But I do know this. Job said, who else am I going to turn to?
Yeah.
Though you slay me, I will still trust in you. Because you are God, and I don't get it. But gosh, I'm sorry. I mean, I've experienced that in my life at times. Like I always said, God doesn't own a watch. You know, he said he's going to help me. Well, when? You know, and it's hard. But I do know what you need. You do need his presence, and you do need other people. And also, a lot of times, we need somebody that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
How to help us.
Yeah.
But I know God doesn't heal everybody, and I know see, this is the thing that's mind-blowing. I know that God heals people. I've seen it. I mean,
I have too.
You've seen it many times. You've called it out from a TV screen. And we know he does it. And then we know sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I know this, when it happens, we still need him and we need each other.
Yeah.
And we need his promises. And, you know, Hebrews 11 says some people were sawn in half and they were, you know, killed. And they were holding on to faith. And it said that some of them did not receive what was promised to them in this lifetime.
That's huge right there.
He put that in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if I were a guy and I was trying to sell this thing, mm-hmm. you know, your marketing plan, don't tell them about all the problems
yeah,
that might.
Exactly.
I mean, I feel for whoever's feeling that.
Yeah.
I've been there. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Don't give up on God. I got to say that.
Yeah.
I got to give you a pat answer, but I know he is and I know he's there and keep talking to him.
Don't you think it's interesting that at the end of Job's story, God says that Job was the only one who's speaking rightly?
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating that all the people that came up with the right answers, God said to them, the only way you've got a hope is if Job prays for you because he's the only one that's been telling the truth.
That's right. And he was the one that railed at God.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, they got the spanking and Job got the cows in the end. You know, so all the Christian answers and said the right things. God said, they have not spoken rightly of me as my servant Job has.
Yeah. The other thing that I think is fascinating about the Psalms is right in the middle, I think it's Psalm 88, there's one psalm that begins in lament and does not resolve. Because, you know, so many psalms will begin with, oh, Lord, you know, real despair. And then, but I will praise you. Psalm 88, which is right in the middle, gives us nothing but the reality of pain. And I've never heard Henry preach on that psalm, surprisingly. But I think it's significant that God put it there, that there are some things that, you know, I read this thing by, I think it was Athanasius. He wrote it in the 4th century, and he said, whereas most of Scripture speaks.
Athanasius?
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet all of us sit around reading Athanasius, right?
Good old Athy.
Yeah. Good old Athy.
But he said this, whereas most of Scripture speaks to us, the Psalms speak for us.
Wow.
They give us a language of prayer.
Wow.
That whatever you're going through, that's what I started to do during COVID. I went out in my balcony every morning, and I read 3 Psalms out loud. Because I thought, my ears need to hear what my eyes are reading.
That's right.
Now, this new book on trust is, it's brilliant. And it breaks down into 5 foundational issues. And I'll say what each one is, and then you can comment on whatever you think is most important or connects greater to our audience. You talk about understanding, motive, ability, character, and track record.
Yeah.
Go.
Well, the first one is understanding.
Mm-hmm.
We trust someone, not when they understand us, but when we understand that they understand.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, I know how you feel, and this, that, and the other. But they're not really even listening.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different person than the person you sit with, and they're really listening, and they're getting it.
Yeah.
Have you ever walked out of an interaction with somebody, and they didn't get it? I tried to tell them, and they didn't get it. And then you walk out of another one and they say, she really understood what I was talking about.
Yeah.
It changes us.
Mm-hmm.
See, we have to have understanding. If I'm going to trust somebody, I need to know that they know what hurts me,
mm-hmm.
what I need in the relationship, what I'm afraid of, what makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And we only know that through the curiosity of really, you know, Proverbs says a person's heart is deep waters and the wise person draws them out.
Mm-hmm.
We feel moving towards and trusting when we feel like somebody gets us. I just had 2 knee replacements over the last couple of years, and I went to the first surgeon and he looks at my x-ray and said, yeah, you need a new knee replacement. And anybody tells you differently, he said, they don't know what they're talking about because that thing is gone. You got to get it replaced. I got to go. So, and he walked out. Literally. I'm not kidding.
That's ridiculous.
And he was one of the bigwigs, right? And I'm going, I stopped him. I said, wait a minute. You just looked at the, you can diagnose, you're going to amputate my knee based on that? And he said, no. And he literally said, this is what I do. You need a new knee. And then he walked out. Something didn't click. I got referred to another doctor, and he says, so tell me about when did this start?
Oh, a question.
And then he said, I looked at your x-rays. He said, how are you walking around?
Wow.
And tell me about the pain. Where does it travel, and how long has this been going on? And I could just feel like I'm kind of, this is different.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. When we really, really get somebody, that's the first step that, well, I might can trust them because they know what I need.
Mm-hmm. So then you move to motive.
Motive, yeah. Is it all about them, or mm-hmm. are they looking out for you? You know, if Dr. Understanding tells me, you know, he's really empathic and understands my pain, and then he's, you know, I actually went to another one because I'm chopping around, and this one was nice and understood it, but then he's calling in all of his residents. He said, now watch how I do this, and then he's talking about, we can put this in this research paper and blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, isn't there a patient here somewhere?
Yeah. Oh, now I'm a guinea pig, yes.
And you felt like it was mm-hmm. kind of all about him.
Right.
And when you're in a relationship, you've got to ask the question, are they for me? I mean, it might be one thing to understand me, but have they got my back? Are they watching out for what I need? We can trust somebody when we know they've got my back, even when I'm not there. They're thinking mm-hmm. about, and if they, I mean, take a marriage. You know, if somebody gets invited to go play golf or something, the husband, and he goes, yeah, I got to go. A different husband says, you know, I want to, and he starts to think, but what's my wife got planned? How that's going to affect her? You're thinking about the other one in the things that you do and how it's going to affect them. Mm-hmm. And what they need. So the second one is the motive. Are they in it? And there's nothing wrong with having needs of our own. Mm-hmm. But Philippians says, for example, but don't be concerned just for your own interests, but also the interests of others. It's not selfish to have needs of your own and wants of your own. It's selfish when yours are the only ones. You can't trust a self-centered person where it's all about them.
Wow.
So that's the second one.
And then ability.
Ability. Well, Dr. Understanding, and now I know he cares about me. I mean, the second doctor actually said, so you're a competitive golfer, I heard. Tell me about that. And I was, you know, telling him about my life in golf. And he goes, we got to get you back out on the golf course. Let's get and he was for me. He wanted to help my life. So let's say he understands me, he's for me. And then he says, so I am so excited about doing your knee replacement because I'm an OB-GYN. I've never done any. I've always wanted to do one since medical school. Wait a minute.
Yeah, probably not.
The third thing is, if we're going to trust somebody in a specific context, do they have the ability to pull off what I'm trusting them for? You know, a lot of people, talk to the singles out there, you might be dating somebody or in love with somebody and you're wowed with the drug trip. You're on oxytocin going through your brain. And they might make a great boyfriend or girlfriend, but do they have the competencies, the abilities that a marriage is going to require? Yeah. That specific skills and ability to resolve conflict and, you know, manage finances and raise kids and all of that. And sometimes, I'll tell you a big one, is friends love being with each other. Why don't we start a business together? Because then we could have fun all the time. And you find out that person's a great friend. It's not a good business person.
Yeah, it's not a good
idea. You trust them in friendship, mm-hmm. but we need other abilities. So you have to look at, what am I trusting them to actually deliver? Mm-hmm. And do they have the competency to do that?
Yeah.
So then the fourth one, if he tells me he's not an OB-GYN, he actually has done a lot of knees. The fourth one is character.
Yeah.
Now, what I mean by
that,
yeah, and it's not just they don't lie, cheat, or steal, because a lot of times somebody can be honest and ethical and integrity and all that, but they don't have the personal makeup for what we're going to trust them for. Mm-hmm. So let's say the doctor says, you know, we have a theater in the operating room, and I'm about to do one if you want to come watch. And you go up there, you know, I wouldn't want to see it either before. And so you're watching, and he's, you know, he's cutting on the person about 5 minutes into it. He goes, oh, no, he's bleeding, oh, no. And he gets all rattled, and he runs out of the OR. His personal makeup, he doesn't have the emotional regulation. He doesn't have the impulse control. Mm-hmm. He can have all the other qualities, but, like, if you're gonna assign a job to somebody that's going to be a year of a turnaround situation, there's not going to be a lot of attaboys or attagirls, and they need a lot of positive stroking, they're not right for that job based on their makeup.
Yeah.
So we have to look at that. I had a brother-in-law who was a Navy SEAL, and when he and Sarah got married, I did their wedding, but the pastor did the counseling because I knew him too well. And, you know, you have to be objective.
Sure.
And so they both flunked this sympathy scale on the test he gave. And the pastor's going, who's going to have any empathy in this
relationship? I pity the dog.
And they were, I mean, they had a great marriage, and they're both really thick-skinned. Mm-hmm. Now, if the bad guys are coming out after me, I would trust Mark's makeup to take out the bad guys and protect me. But in the dark night of the soul where I need a shoulder to cry on, Mark would say, get over it, let's go, you know.
Yeah.
I would want somebody with a different little makeup, but then that's not the person I would want protecting me from the bad guys. So it's how people are glued together. And then the fifth one is the track record, which means what happened the last time?
Right.
What happened the last time that I depended on this person? Now, sometimes there can be mistakes, but if there's a pattern of somebody actually delivering what we have needed from them, that track record means something.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's terrible, Sheila, is people trust people without really looking at the track record. Mm. And the best predictor of the future is always the past, unless some period of change happens. Mm. Then they have a new past then, right? So it's still the past.
Yeah.
So we have to know what happened last time somebody depended on this person.
So let me ask you, what if you are the one who has broken trust?
Yeah.
How do you rebuild trust if it's been broken?
Well, that's actually what the half of the book is about, really, almost half. You know, the person, if you flip it, you know, the person that has been betrayed, let's say somebody has an affair, for example, mm-hmm. the person that's been betrayed, they're in a dilemma about trust because they only have two choices and both of them are bad. Mm-hmm. One of them, it feels like I can't trust them, so I gotta get rid of them. But if they do that, they lose the home, they lose the family, mm-hmm. they lose the things about that person that they love. So if we always, you know, if we can't restore trust in some relationships, there's a lot of loss. That's why God went to the cross, so mm-hmm. he could restore. But then the flip side of that is equally not so attractive because, okay, I am going to trust him. Well, now I'm opening myself up to get hurt again.
Yeah.
And that's why rebuilding it is so hard. But it can be done if we do the right things. Now, you ask about the person that's broken it. You've got to understand you are not going to persuade that person into trusting you. What you've got to do is it's kind of the model I put in the book. You've got to go through, starting with understanding, you've mm-hmm. got to sit and you got to really listen to the pain mm-hmm. without excusing, without blaming. And I've seen couples that have put this back together really well. And I always say to the one who was the betrayer, you did a great job of taking it, because mm-hmm. you got to listen, and that's hard to do. And a lot of people want to cut that short. So you've got to understand how you have hurt the other person, mm-hmm. and they need to understand that you understand. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you got to look for the areas where you did not make them feel like your motive was about them. Mm-hmm. Because where self-centeredness has come into a marriage or a business relationship or a friendship, the other person feels like they're not important to you. So you got to, and sometimes you got to go back and say, you know, in our history, I can see how when I did this, it felt like I wasn't taking your you into consideration. And you just have to go through the list, really, and in the relationship, build those things. And it can be rebuilt. It's amazing how resilient people are when the right ingredients are present. Mm. And that's what God did for us. He didn't just say, trust me. What did he do? The first thing is, I understand how. Well, I was born a baby in poverty, and I got rejected, and I got betrayed, and I was tempted in all things, and I got my best friends blew me off. And the incarnation is the deepest empathy that exists. He knows our suffering. He gets it. And then we look at the motive. What did God do? You don't think he's for us? Well, who else died? And if God be for us, who can be against us? And the motive, and then the competency, I think he can pull this off, and you just go down the list. But I'd say this, there's great hope for rebuilding trust in a relationship. Great hope. And the Bible gives us a very clear path of how, but you're not going to do it by just saying, I'm sorry, forgive me, I won't do it again. That's not going to do it. You've got to do the things God did.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, totally different kind of question. But at this stage and age in your life.
Are you calling me old?
Henry, I think we're about the same. So, of course I'm not.
Are you experiencing the teen years as tough as I am?
Oh, yeah. It's very hard being a teenager
it's
these
hard,
days.
Isn't it? Yes. Yeah, all the social
not sure
media.
Why my knees are hard going upstairs, but but I want to ask you, at this stage in your life, having been in relationship with Christ for so many years, what would you say if you could sit down with your 21-year-old self and talk to him?
I would say, dude's going to be harder than you thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, when Jesus said, in the world you will have tribulation, but take courage, I've overcome the world.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I do have a 21-year-old daughter and a 22-year-old daughter. And as they're launching, I sat down with both of them and I said, what I would say to me at that age, I said, you know what, I want you to start with Proverbs 3. Mm-hmm. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, everything you do, acknowledge him, which basically means, you know, acknowledge, know, connect, turn to, include him, basically. Mm-hmm. And he'll direct your path. I go, you're looking at life and trying to build one. You've got to be connected to the source of life and all the resources, and he knows where the good dates are, and he knows where the good jobs are, and you got to start with him, but do not lean on your own understanding, because sometimes it is going to look like he is not there, and it's going to look like there's no way out, and it's going to look like there's no tomorrow, and you can't lean on your own understanding because he's sitting in the tower above it. Mm-hmm. And I tell him, it's like a Netflix movie. You know, if you hit pause, you have scenes.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yeah.
You take any, like a romantic comedy, you go a third of the way through it, she picks up her phone, sees a text, or his phone, sees a text from the old girlfriend, packs up, tells the roommate, I'm moving back across the country, and it's over, right? Well, that scene is going to be in your movie in a different topic, if not that one, but there's a whole movie.
Right.
God sits back here, and he knows the whole movie. Mm. And we get in trouble when we get lost in one scene. Mm. And so when you're in that scene, lean not on your own understanding, and he'll direct the rest of the script. And that's what I would tell me. And, you know, there are a lot of moments where that's been hard, but looking back, as you know about your life, it's been true. He will direct your steps.
Yeah, I remember thinking about that for my own life, about what I would tell. And a lot of what you said is exactly what I would have said. But I probably would have added, get rid of your things, this list of things you think you need to do to make God love you.
Oh.
Because that was, when I came to Christ, for me it was a, okay, my dad who once loved me died by suicide, so you can have something that's solid and it can be gone in a moment. So that has to be the same with God. So I'm going to behave for the rest of my life so that God won't stop loving me. And it was, I lived with that list for years until I read your book, Changes That Heal. And you came on the 700 Club. And I remember when I was preparing for and reading through that book, it was like this alarm bell going off in my soul. I mean, I was aware of I was in trouble, but I didn't know that the trouble was in me. I didn't understand. Mm. And from that, honestly, God has used you so much in my life, Henry. Mm. I'm so, so profoundly grateful. Because it led to me spending a month in a psychiatric hospital. But I learned that God will sometimes take you to prison to set you free.
He will.
And that's what it was for me. So I'm just thinking, would you just take a moment and pray for our audience? Talk to them, just whatever is on your heart.
Yeah. Well, Father, I start with the same thing that Sheila prayed in the room before we came on, that what an incredible thing to be able to call you Father. Mm. And you told us to pray our Father who art in heaven, and we start there. And God, I want to pray for everybody out there who at this moment does feel fatherless, if they feel disconnected from you, if they can't find you. God, I pray that you, in supernatural ways and in natural ways, that you start to show up even in greater measure right where they are. I pray that you move things and move people and circumstances to remind them and show them that you are there. And I pray that you show up with what people need. God, we cry to you for the needs that are out there. And I ask you to move. And God, I pray that all of us, in those moments where our understanding is not giving us the answer we need, that we can still trust. And I pray that you give gifts of faith right now to people. Yes. You said that faith is something that you can, it's a gift. It's an act of grace. And I pray for more faith for all of us, God. And I pray for healings.
Yes.
I know there's physical needs out there. There are emotional needs. God, I pray that you would move right now wherever a heart is crying out to you, and that you would hear those cries, and that you would move with your spirit and heal people in whatever they're going through. And God, we just give you the praise and the thanks and ask for your continued favor and blessing in all of our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Henry, we've talked about a lot of things. And I think one of the things I've always loved most about you is because you are a psychologist, you have this tremendous understanding of the human heart, the human brain, the human soul, with this deep biblical knowledge. That's what always blew me away when we worked together. You would just, there's a lot of the Word of God tucked deep in your heart. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's, I'm grateful for that. But I'm thinking of some of our viewers now who think, I resonate with everything that Henry said. I know this is what I need, but I don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. What would you say?
Well, I would say that, first of all, that's normal. I don't want you to, you know, be hard on yourself for not knowing where to start, because if you knew where to start, you wouldn't need to start.
Right? Exactly.
Self-help is kind of two words that don't go together. If I need help, then I can't be the helper. So we all get stuck. We all get to the end of ourselves at various points. But there's a law in physics called the second law of thermodynamics, which says in a closed system, everything gets worse over time. That's why when you try leaving a couple of toddlers at home for the weekend, come back
which
on
Monday. Which we don't recommend, by the way.
Yeah, the house does not look better. It's going downhill, right? Until somebody knocks on the door and it's Super Nanny, and she comes in and she can whip that place back into shape. Well, if we're a closed system, and we're just there by ourselves trying to, again, lean on our own understanding, we've got to open up the system, like physics says, to a new energy source and new intelligence to use that energy in the right ways.
What does that mean? Okay. What does that look like?
For example, some people will turn for support, but the people they're turning to don't really understand depression.
Yeah.
They don't understand anxiety. They don't understand addictions. And they're going to be like Job's friends. Some people get the intelligence and they might go on, spend their time on the internet researching depression, this, that, and the other. But you don't have the energy source of God's people. But, you know, the Bible says, encourage one another, put courage into one another, support one another, weep with those who weep, correct one another. So we've got to have the force to come in and hold us up, lift us up, propel us to be able to do the next thing. But we also got to know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I want you to reach outside of yourself and find some groups or a counselor or a pastor or some wise friends to start with. Just take the first step of opening up the system to new energy from the outside, but some real intelligence and wisdom so they know what to do. Sheila, I love you and I trust you. I did not call you for my knee replacement.
I was a little hurt, but I understood.
If I wanted to understand a 4th century spiritual writer, you'd be the one I'd call. We've got to have somebody that understands and has the wisdom and knowledge to do what needs to be done.
Yeah.